Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Susan Shand, Katie Weaver, and Mario Ritter Jr. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Swarms of locusts have destroyed large areas of farmland and are threatening food security in East Africa. Kenya is reporting its worst locust outbreak in 70 years. Billions of the insects have already destroyed tens of thousands of hectares of plant life across the country. Record locust outbreaks have also been reported in Ethiopia and Somalia. The insects have also attacked parts of Sudan, Djibouti, and Eritrea. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, is calling it East Africa's worst desert locust invasion in 25 years. In Somalia, the government declared a national emergency because of locusts. It said the outbreak was presenting a major threat to the already weakened food security situation. Airplanes have been releasing chemical pesticides to control the locust population. But officials have said they have limited money and equipment to fight the insects in affected areas. UN officials have said they are worried that the swarms could spread to Uganda and South Sudan. They estimate that $76 million is needed now to widen efforts aimed at preventing further spread across East Africa. The desert locusts, which grow to be about as long as a person's finger, produce young very quickly. They fly in large groups in search of food. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, an East African group, reports that locust swarms can contain up to 150 million locusts per square kilometer. It noted that the swarms migrate with the wind and can cover 100 to 150 kilometers in a day. An average swarm could destroy the same number of food crops in a day as could feed 2,500 people, the group added. UN officials have warned that if the extreme outbreaks are not controlled, the number of locusts could grow 500 times by June. Last December, Somalia suffered a locust outbreak that destroyed about 100,000 hectares of farmland. Government officials have warned that a second invasion will be even more destructive. The current outbreaks followed one of the wettest years on record in East Africa. Heavy rainfall and warmer temperatures help the locust population grow. Officials from the FAO say that even before the locust invasions, about 11 million people were experiencing food insecurity in Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya. Therefore, we need to make all possible efforts to avoid such a deterioration, said FAO official Dominique Bourgeon. He spoke to a Reuters news agency reporter after visiting two affected areas in Kenya. In Somalia, conflict and instability issues have made pesticide spraying operations difficult, the FAO noted in December. In northern Kenya, five planes were releasing chemicals to fight the outbreak, the Associated Press reported. I'm Brian Lynn.
On its large campus in the middle of America, the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is trying to keep the fast-spreading coronavirus away from its students. The school has one of the highest percentages of Chinese students among U.S. universities. It has closed study programs in China for the spring and banned students from traveling to the country for school-related purposes. It has told teachers to follow federal travel advisories that warned against going to China. We want to take all of the precautions we can so we keep our community healthy, said Robin Kaler. She is Associate Chancellor for Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, 217 kilometers south of Chicago. The first human-to-human transmission of the disease in the United States was confirmed in Illinois. More than 350,000 Chinese students are studying at universities and colleges in America. Also, about 10,000 American students attend school in China. Many of the Chinese students in the U.S. have traveled to China in recent weeks, which makes it possible that the virus might spread at universities. Colleges and universities are very much on the front line of those because of our role as global institutions, said Sarah Von Orman. She is chief health officer at the University of Southern California. In the American capital of Washington, D.C., public health officials say the risk of catching the virus remains low. Doctors, however, continue to see patients who are worried that their infection might be the coronavirus. The administration of President Donald Trump declared a national public health emergency on Friday. In medical centers and hospitals, doctors are preparing emergency systems and studying protocols in case the virus does begin to spread. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported on Sunday that 11 cases of the Wuhan coronavirus had been confirmed in the U.S. They were in California, Washington State, Illinois, Massachusetts, and Arizona. Officials expect that number to rise. Several possible coronavirus cases are being investigated in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. I'm Susan Shand.
Americans have been hearing more about brain injuries after an Iranian missile attack on United States forces in Iraq. The missiles targeted an airbase where U.S. and coalition troops were deployed. The U.S. Defense Department reports that 50 service members were found to have suffered a traumatic brain injury, or TBI, after the attack last month. TBIs are not wounds like burns or cuts. They result from being near an explosion or a forceful strike to the body. TBIs appear to take a long time for doctors to diagnose. William Schmitz is a national commander for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. He told the Associated Press, "TBI is a serious injury and one that cannot be taken lightly." Schmitz added that TBI is known to cause depression, memory loss, severe headaches, and loss of balance. It can also make the person feel very tired. Sometimes there are long-term effects. U.S. President Donald Trump was recently criticized after he dismissed news of the injuries. The veterans group called on Trump to apologize for what it called his misguided remarks.
The missile attack took place on January 8th. Because the injuries take so long to appear, the Defense Department did not announce the first cases until 1 week after the attack. At the time, it said 11 people were affected. Military officials now say 50 service members have been diagnosed, and the number could increase. By January 28th, 31 of the 50 had returned to active duty. Details of the U.S. injuries have not been reported, and the severity of the cases has not been made public. No one was killed in the attack. It took place after a drone strike in Baghdad killed a top Iranian general who commanded the paramilitary Quds Force.
TBI began to gain more attention after the U.S. military invaded Iraq in 2003 to oust President Saddam Hussein. After his defeat, resistance forces continued to use roadside bombs to fight U.S. and coalition forces. Survivors of such attacks not only suffered physical injuries, but experienced head injuries, like concussions, that have been linked to mental health problems. For generations, battlefield traumatic brain injuries were not understood and often dismissed, notes U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire. She is a member of the Democratic Party. Research has shown that the issue of TBIs remains poorly understood. The Defense Department has been studying brain injuries since the early 1990s. It established a head injury program that developed into the Defense and Veterans Brain Injury Center. The center studies research findings related to TBI, such as possible links to behavioral issues, including alcohol abuse and suicide.
In January, one study suggested that military members with serious TBI were more likely than others to experience mental health problems. The study was a project of University of Massachusetts Amherst Health Services researchers. Some experts are linking long-term health effects to smaller explosions that take place, for example, in artillery training and from small handheld rockets. Ruyi Shi is a professor of biomedical engineering at Purdue University in Indiana. He says researchers are finding that even a mild blast can cause long-term, life-changing health issues. A 2018 study by the federally supported RAND Corporation found little research on the subject. There also appeared to be little understanding of the possible damage to the nervous system from repeatedly experiencing low-level blasts. The same year, a research group called the Center for a New American Security also released a study. It urged the Defense Department to keep records of any soldier in training or combat who is likely to be in a position where he or she may be exposed to blasts. The group called for brain imaging tests of soldiers to better understand how explosions affect the brain.
I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History, in VOA Special English. There was one main issue in America's presidential election of 1916. That issue was war. Europe was in the middle of what is now remembered as World War I. It was the bloodiest conflict the world has ever known. Most Americans wanted no part of the struggle in Europe. They supported their country's official position, neutrality. This desire was the main reason President Woodrow Wilson won re-election. People gave Wilson their votes because they hoped he would continue to keep America out of the war. Larry West and Morris Joyce tell more about the presidency of Woodrow Wilson.
Like most Americans, Woodrow Wilson did not want war. He feared that entering the conflict would cost the United States many lives. Wilson read the reports from European battlefields. The news was unbelievably terrible. By the end of 1916, several million men had been killed, wounded, or captured. At the Battle of Verdun, French forces stopped a German attack. The cost was high on both sides. More than 700,000 soldiers were killed, wounded, or captured. The Battle of the Somme followed. Britain lost 60,000 men on the first day. By the time the battle was over, losses for both sides totaled more than a million. Germany also was at war on its eastern border with Russia. Losses on that battlefront, too, totaled more than a million men.
At the time of America's presidential election in 1916, Germany seemed to be winning the war. Its losses were terrible. But the losses of its enemies, the Allies, were even worse. German forces occupied much of northern France and almost all of Belgium. German and Austrian soldiers also held parts of Russia, Italy, Romania, and Serbia. Germany was winning on the battlefield. The Allies were winning at sea. A British blockade, cut off almost all German trade with the rest of the world. Even food shipments were blocked. As a result, Germany faced mass starvation. It urgently needed to break the blockade and get food.
This situation finally forced Germany to make the decision that would bring the United States into the war. It decided to use its submarines to break the British blockade. The submarines would attack any ships that came near Britain or other parts of Europe. This included ships from neutral countries, like the United States. Earlier, Germany had made a promise to the United States. Its submarines would not attack civilian ships unless warning was given and the lives of those on the ships were saved. Now Germany was withdrawing that promise. It said unrestricted submarine warfare would begin immediately. German ruler Kaiser Wilhelm said, "If Wilson wants war, let him make it, and let him then have it."
President Wilson immediately broke diplomatic relations with Germany. He still hoped the two nations would not go to war. He left that decision to Germany. If German submarines sank American ships, Wilson would have no choice but to declare war. Most American shipping companies feared attack by German submarines. Throughout the early part of 1917, they kept their ships in home ports. They wanted protection. So, they asked for permission to arm their ships. At first, President Wilson refused to seek such permission from Congress. He did not want to do anything that might cause Germany to declare war. Then he received secret news from Britain. British agents had gotten a copy of a telegram from Germany's foreign minister to Germany's ambassador in Mexico. The telegram said Germany was planning hostile acts against the United States. Wilson acted quickly. He began putting guns and sailors on American trade ships.
It did not take long for the worst to happen. Within days, a German submarine sank an unarmed American ship, the Algonquin. Then three more American ships were sunk. Many lives were lost. President Wilson no longer had a choice between war and peace. There would be war. Wilson called a special session of Congress. Members of both the Senate and House of Representatives gathered in one room. They stood as the president walked quickly to the front. He stood silent for a moment before speaking. This is what he said.
"Fully understanding the serious step I am taking, I advise that the Congress declare the recent acts of the German government to be, in fact, nothing less than war against the United States. It is a fearful thing to lead this great, peaceful people into war. but right is more precious than peace. And we will fight for the things which we have always carried nearest our hearts, for democracy, for the rights and liberties of small nations, and for the belief that a worldwide union of free people can bring peace and safety to all nations.
President Wilson's emotional speech brought tears to the eyes of many of the lawmakers. They felt the great seriousness of his request. Outside, crowds lined the street to cheer Wilson as he returned to the White House from the Capitol building. He sat in his car and shook his head sadly. "Think of what it is they are cheering," he said. "My message today was a message of death for our young men. How strange it seems they would cheer that." On April 6th, 1917, Congress approved a declaration of war against Germany.
The Allies, Britain, France, and Russia welcomed American involvement. The war was going badly for them. It had been very costly in lives, money, and supplies. Allied shipping was suffering heavy losses from German submarine attacks. A British naval blockade had greatly reduced food shipments to Germany. Now, Britain itself faced dangerously low supplies of food. Allied representatives went to Washington to explain what the Allies needed. They needed supplies, especially food, immediately. They needed money to pay for the supplies. They needed ships to get the supplies from America to Europe. And they needed American soldiers.
President Wilson and Congress worked together to organize the United States for war. Congress gave Wilson new wartime powers. He soon formed a council to build ships, improve industrial production, and control national transportation. He formed an agricultural agency to increase food production and food exports. And he formed an information committee to build public support for the war. Wilson's efforts succeeded. The Allies quickly got the ships, supplies, and money they requested. Most important, they soon got American soldiers.
Allied military leaders said only about 500,000 troops were needed from the United States. But American officials decided to build a much larger army. Before long, large numbers of American soldiers were crossing the Atlantic Ocean. They would fight the Germans at the western battlefronts of Europe. The extra strength they gave the Allies would play a major part in helping defeat Germany.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.